Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Cult of Gracie Radio, broadcasting on a strange Friday night, late at night on XXBN via the Blog Talk Radio Network. XXBN is registered in Raleigh, North Carolina, but I myself, Gracie Bissett, I am sitting here in Fargo, North Dakota. And our guest tonight is way out in San Francisco, California, so it's like we're spanning the nation. Our guest tonight is Johannes of Monochrome, who is, I believe, the founder, if not the coordinator, for Ars Electronica Conference, which is going on in San Francisco. I would like to remind listeners of two things. One is the chat room is open. If you are afraid of calling in with a question and would like to type one in the chat room, I can read comments there, but I am unable to respond to them. And the other thing I'll remind you of tonight is that we're broadcasting here from a live event, and Johannes is borrowing a other person's cell phone to try to make this call, so we're keeping our fingers crossed. But if we lose him during the show, he'll be fine. It's just that a cell phone wasn't working. So no one died during the making of this program. All right, now I'm going to welcome Johannes to the show tonight, and I'm going to have him pronounce his whole name because this just fascinates me seeing it in letters. How do you pronounce your name, Johannes?
Oh, it's actually Johannes Grenzfurtner, but you shouldn't try it. It's hard. Even for German-speaking people, it's really hard to pronounce my name. But actually, it's not even as hard as Schwarzenegger, and I guess you should be used to Schwarzenegger, but don't try it. Just call me Johannes of Monochrome. That's perfect.
You can change your last name to Of Monochrome, and then people will know.
Okay, so it's a little bit noisy here because there will be a reading starting in a couple of minutes, just like the door next to me. I'm pretty much in the hallway, and that's how it is. I mean, if you organize a big conference, you have interviews, and sometimes you have to do the interviews on the cell phone in some hallway of a building I've never been before. So exciting. So, and it's really cool to be on the show and to tell you about Ars Electronica. I mean, do you have any specific questions, or should I just tell you the general concept of the conference?
You know, this is the second year, right?
It's the second year, yes. The second year of Ars Electronica. The first year, in 2007, we started Ars Electronica because we wanted to have a space, like a conference, a discussion space, a discourse space about pornography and technological innovation. That was the main topic of last year's conference. So we were thinking there is pornography out there, and people somehow know and somehow feel that pornography stimulated technological innovation in many, many ways. I mean, you just have to think about the war between different tape formats in the early 1980s between VHS and Betamax and all that stuff. And the porn industry was pretty much into it, and there's one reason the VHS tape made it as a video format. The porn industry was behind it. I heard a strange beep. Am I still online?
Yes, you're here.
Hey, I'm here. Okay, it's really noisy. Okay, so last year we wanted to bring people from all over the world, from many different fields together to discuss pornography and technological innovation. So people, historians, philosophers, people from the tech industry, people dealing with pornography and technology on a daily basis, like system administrators who work for porn companies, stuff like that. And we really wanted to have a broad discourse about what happened in the past and what will happen in the future. Because the interesting thing about pornography is it's not like in the past, for example. You have people like Gutenberg, for example, who pretty much invented the printing press. And the first thing he printed after he printed the first Bibles, he printed erotica. There was a case in the 1880s when photography was pretty new, that a guy in London, his home was raided by the police, and they found around 150,000 pornographic images in his cellar. So the people were actually really, really adopting new kinds of media, new kinds of media formats pretty early for pornography, and pornography stimulated the whole evolution of certain forms of media. So, I mean, there's a really interesting story about, for example, the Polaroid camera. The Polaroid camera was the first commercially available Polaroid camera in the 1960s was called the Swinger. So the industry obviously knew what target group they were aiming at, because people, of course, if they wanted to do amateur porn at home, they were they were not really into the idea of taking amateur porn pictures and bringing them to some photo processing company in person, and somebody would actually see it. So they wanted to have pictures, pornography, amateur pornography in a private way. They wanted it created in their homes and developed in their homes. And that's in a certain way what the Polaroid camera was aiming at. So there's lots and lots of different things to talk about. And I already mentioned the VHS tape and Betamax battle in the 1980s. And of course, there was lots of telephone sex in the 1980s. So the telecommunication infrastructure was too weak to support telephone sex hotlines in the 1980s. So they had to pretty much spice up the infrastructure for telesex providers in the 1980s. And of course, if you think about pornography, you think about the internet. And you have, of course, broadband internet pretty much wouldn't exist if the consumers wouldn't have been completely into the idea of having porn in their homes. Oh my God, it's really, really loud here. I have to go a little bit wait. The people are shoveling in. I mean, we have a conference here. There are many, many people showing up, and that's actually pretty cool. But I hope you can still understand me. Am I still online?
Yes, you're still here. We're listening.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. So, I mean, that was pretty much last year's topic. So we wanted to think about what is the task of... oh my, there's so many people shuffling in. Actually, it's too bad I can't see the reading. Oh my, because I'm currently, for all the people out there who don't know where I am, I'm currently at the Center for Sex and Culture in San Francisco. And in a couple of minutes, the Ars Electronica reading will be starting. And we have a couple of really interesting guest stars today. For example, Rudy Rucker, a science fiction author. And it will be a reading about sex, science fiction, and technology. And a couple of people will be reading short stories and parts of novels that deal with science fiction and sex. That's what's happening here. That's why so many people shoveling in. And that's really cool, actually. Okay, so I jump back to last year's conference. So we wanted to have a historical perspective about pornography and technological innovation. And we had many, many interesting panels and discussions. And we, of course, were also aiming at the future. So what brought, what stimulated technological innovation in the past, and what will be the main aspects of change and media evolution in the future. And we had a couple of nice talks about that even last year. But this year, we are focusing on a really exciting aspect, and that's sex and science fiction. So we want to peek into the future, and we invited many, many people from different fields to think about the future of sex and the future of techno-sex and what possibilities are out there and what dangers might be out there concerning, you know, like privacy and aspects like that. So, and that's actually currently going on. So the first day of the conference is already over. We have three blocks of panels and talks, and the first day of Ars Electronica 2008 was devoted to the topic of narration. The second day tomorrow will be devoted to the topic of technology, and the third day will be dealing with politics. So we have, for example, today had a really wonderful keynote speaker, Constance Penley. She wrote an excellent book about It's called NASA Trek. She's a researcher, and she's been researching about the history of NASA and the history of homoerotic science fiction stories and homoerotic slash science fiction. And that's really, really interesting. And she was our keynote speaker today. And we talked about the history of how erotic fan fiction started. And it's quite obvious that a lot of homoerotic fan fiction started when Star Trek was first aired in 1966, because many fans saw a clear homoerotic relationship between Kirk and Spock, and it's really interesting to see it in that way and how that evolved in the next couple of decades. And nowadays, you have many, many people out there who write fan science fiction stories, fan slash stories about sexuality and science fiction, especially about Star Trek. And we had a couple of really nice discussions. And I'm talking. Do you have any specific questions for me?
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you is, because the theme is you know, linking sex and science fiction, did you invite anyone from the, you know, the science fiction community that maybe isn't so, you know, more mainstream than sex?
Yes, of course. So, for example, tomorrow we'll have Rudy Rucker as our keynote speaker. He is a really famous science fiction author. He was one of the main figures behind the cyberpunk science fiction genre in the 1980s. And for example, today we had Risa Brown and Kit O'Connell. They are both actually from Texas, and they were giving a really interesting talk about the future of the novel. So what is the 21st century novel? And because they are science fiction authors and they are highly interested in sex and technology, they were presenting a couple of really great aspects about what could be the future of the novel and what could be the future of porn, and how could we find new forms of new literary forms of dealing with sex and technology in the future. And they are pretty much planning a new online community devoted to creating you could almost see it as a form of Second Life in a certain way, but not Second Life in a graphic sense, but Second Life for many, many, many devoted authors, science fiction authors, or whatever authors out there, like writers, people who want to participate. And it will be some kind of a giant new second world, but it will be a world of text. It will be a world of, like, a new form of novel that many, many, many people can participate in. And that's pretty exciting. It may sound a little bit abstract now for you, but I think you will definitely hear of Risa Brown and Kit O'Connell in the next couple of months. They'll be starting their project, I guess, in December. And I wouldn't believe that there will be tons of media reports about that happening soon. And I'm pretty glad we have them here at our conference when they pretty much first proposed or presented their project. It's pretty exciting. And to go back to they're still a pretty, you can't say unknown, but they're well-known. Risa and Kit are well-known in the realms of fan science fiction. But of course, we have people here who are pretty much science fiction authors by trade, so they are doing this for a long, long, long time. And I had a good interview today with Richard Kadrey. I mean, do you know Richard Kadrey?
I can, the name again?
It's Richard Kadrey. Kadrey is also, he's really cool. He is, today we had a panel called Science Fiction, and we were pretty much talking on from a historical perspective, what happened in the 1950s and 1960s, 70s, and 80s, concerning science fiction and sexuality and of course pornography. So how society changed in the 50s and 60s, what interesting names popped up, so what were the tendencies and the new vectors, you could call it, that emerged in the 60s and 70s with, for example, films like Barbarella, or in the 1970s, a highly dystopian decade for science fiction, where you have even Star Wars, a really important part of mainstream cuts in the 1970s. Even Star Wars is a highly dystopian kind of world, if you see like the desert planet and all that stuff. So, but still there's highly dystopian worlds going on, but they are somehow all the time related to sex and hedonism. For example, there is Logan's Run, a film with Michael York from the mid-1970s, and it's a pretty hedonistic sex-related world, but all the people living in this dystopian world, they're all killed when you're 30 years old. So it's this like world only inhabited by young and beautiful people who are living in this like hedonistic paradise, but they are not allowed to live longer than 30 years, then they will be killed. So it's a really almost a very interesting aspect to talk about this this relationship between sex and death and hedonism and control. It's Richard Cadry and I we discussed it a lot today in his panel, and we wanted to try to find out if there's a common topic when people write about sex or use sex in science fiction. What are the motives of the people? Why are they doing that? Is it just to sell books because it contains sex, or is it because they want to encode a certain metaphor? What is it all about? And I mean, of course, you have like books like The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood from the 1980s. That's clearly a reaction to the reactionary politics going on, like in the Reagan era, when she was pretty much reacting to this emerging Christian fundamentalist political sphere growing, and having, of course, its peak with Reagan as the American president, and she was pretty much reacting to that. And it's a highly highly dystopian and dark metaphor of what could happen if the stuff even gets worse. And that's really interesting because the main topic is reproduction. It's about a world where most of the females, most of the women can't get pregnant anymore. So there's this highly totalitarian regime, a Christian totalitarian regime controlling the birth rates and all that stuff, and there's tons of really, really interesting material just in this single book by Margaret Atwood. I mean, especially science and science fiction are like huge topics. I mean, we have 3 days of talks and panels, and I think we'll only scratch the surface. I hope we can get deeper and deeper and deeper into the subject, but it's just a huge and an enormous amount of things we could discuss when we're talking about the topic.
And you had awards last night, right?
Yes, we had. Yeah, that's right. Because Ars Electronica consists of pretty much 4 days, and the first day is always the opening night. And the opening night is it's somehow like a party. Last year we thought it's really cool to have not only have talks and academic discussions, but it's interesting to have it's hard. So we wanted to have an additional aspect of the whole thing, and we said it would be cool to have a couple of performances and shows, maybe something that's more like hands-on in a certain way and not academic and not only talks. And last year we had a presentation of Fucking Machines by Kink.com, and we thought it would be interesting to go a little bit further and officially announce a new kind of award, and we call it the Pre-Ars Electronica, and it's an unobjectional award for sex machines, orgasmatrons, and teledildonics. So we sent out a call and asked people, please send us your ideas for sex machines, teledildonic devices, and orgasmatrons, because we really like this term of orgasmatron. It's from the Woody Allen film, The Sleeper. So, and it was really amazing how many letters and emails we got about people presenting us their ideas of machines they would like to construct and build.
Most and how many are you talking about? Like 10, 100?
I mean, we got, I guess, I'm not sure. I guess we got at least 200 emails and letters of people with almost in incredibly detailed descriptions of machines that people like those guys wanted to build. And we then picked four of the machines and said, hey, that's really interesting. These four machines, we really want that these machines, they should become reality. And some of them already were built before that. So we just presented them there. So the only thing we had to do is like somehow transport the machines to San Francisco. And some machines were exclusively pretty much built for Ars Electronica, or the only motivation for the people was to construct the machines and bring them to Ars Electronica. So, and our four winners, it's very diverse. So we have our four winners are, it's even hard to describe because they're so different. There's one machine by Michael of Coxie Pro. He is from California. And the machine it's very impressive. I mean, I really would like to announce the homepage, because on the radio it's kind of hard to describe those machines. You really have to see them. So
And where can they see them?
Yeah, pardon?
And where will they be? Will they be at monochrome.com?
Yeah, you could go. There are two ways. It's monochrome.at/ars-electronica. But I think I'll probably spell it for you because it's a little bit complicated. So it's www.monochrome, that's monochrom.at, because we are from Austria, and then / Ars Electronica, and that's ARSE-Electronica, ELEKTRONIKA. Oh my God. But I tell you what, there's Google. Google is the last existing superpower on the planet. Go to Google and just enter Ars Electronica. The only important thing is that you write Ars like S, ARSE. If you write Ars Electronica and if you enter that in Google, you'll immediately find our site and go there. And there are a couple of excellent pictures of the machines who won the awards yesterday.
How do you decide the winner?
So, because we wanted to have four or five completely different aspects of sex machines or erotic machines. So, for example, the machine by Coxie Pro, it's pretty much a giant... I would even call it like a BDSM fucking machine. It's really giant, and when I saw it first time, I was really scared about it. It's a wonderful piece of machinery. But you really have to see it. Okay, it's almost like the guy Michael of Coxie Pro created it. He calls it a passion machine. And I mean, I can understand why he called it the passion machine, but I could even call it a macho machine. It's really hardcore. Okay. So, and there's another machine by Stéphane Perrine, and he's actually from France, but he now lives in Japan, and he constructed a machine. It's pretty much only a dildo. It's a plain, simple dildo you can buy in whatever sex store you want to go. But the cool thing about it is the dildo is connected to a device, and the dildo only moves and only starts to vibrate when there's an earthquake somewhere on the planet. So it pretty much takes seismic data of earthquakes on the planet, and the magnitude and where they are, if they are far away from the dildo or not, and takes that data, and the dildo only moves if there's somewhere an earthquake. And we really like this wonderful idea of connecting sex and death. I'm European, maybe that's because I like that.
It wouldn't have to be death if you kept the machine under the doorway. Isn't that where you're supposed to stand during an earthquake? So if you kept the machine in the doorway, then
yeah,
you'd be
probably.
Fine.
So we really like the idea that the dildo, like the vibrator, is actually only moving and vibrating if there's an earthquake somewhere, and if it's really moving strong. It's probably, probably there are a couple of hundred people dying somewhere, and the vibrator is moving. And it's this, I like the tension between this idea of personal sexual pleasure, but connected to this large-scale event that may be happening somewhere on the planet. And actually, during the presentation yesterday, there even was a small earthquake somewhere, and it really, for a short time, so there was a really like short of an earthquake going on there. And he can modify the machine. So he has a second module he can use for the machine. That's kind of bizarre and maybe a little bit morbid. But he's connecting the machine to certain data streams. And for example, he can also connect the machine to a site that is measuring the civilian body count in Iraq, and that kind of makes you think. Wow, there's a dildo that's only moving if the body count in Iraq is high, and that kind of twists your mind when you think about that. And I really like that. So that's pretty much the second piece. We thought that's a really interesting idea of combining sex and technology and politics in a certain way. The third machine by Benjamin Cowden, he is from the Bay Area, and that's actually not even a sex machine. It is, you have to imagine a big table with a very mechanical looking device on it, and it's a rubber tongue, a fake rubber tongue, licking a lollipop. So it's like it's a lollipop licking machine. So you can crank the machine, and there is an artificial tongue licking a lollipop for all eternity. And are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. I said it was interesting.
Okay, cool. I'm just, it's hard to hear you here in the stupid hallway here somewhere in San Francisco. Okay, and he thought it's really interesting that there's someone who built a machine that it's so there's a machine licking a lollipop. So why is it happening? Why should someone do that? And I really like the idea that a lollipop, especially if you're thinking about popular culture like a beautiful girl licking a lollipop. It's a highly sexually charged thing. So there's lot, just like enter girl and lollipop on Google, and you'll see there's a whole culture of lollipop licking fetishists out there with that. So, and I kind of like the idea, or actually, I'm always talking about myself, but I'm part of a team, so Monochrome, we're a couple of people. We are actually a group of 9 people, so we somehow try to sit together and form a jury and think about all this stuff. So when I'm talking about myself here, I'm of course talking about Monochrome and my colleagues who helped me doing all this stuff. So we were sitting there and we saw a picture of the machine, and we said that's cool. He should get an award. It's not really a sex machine. It's not intended to actually stimulate someone, but it somehow is a good reference to this the popular culture of lollipops and erotics and girls and girly power, and it's almost as if the artist was, it's like outsourcing the fetish to the machine, so we don't even have to have our own fetishes. We even like outsource our fetishes to the machine. So
I would argue with you on that. I would say that, that is the kind of sex machine that moves the most mightiest of sex organs, which is the brain. Like you said, it's the imagery,
of course, the idea.
And that's a huge arousal point. It may not manipulate the genitals, but it sure, you know, moves that organ.
You're definitely right about that, of course. Most of the sex machines, and we had Timothy Archibald, as a guest last year. Timothy Archibald wrote an excellent book, and he's a photographer, so he took pictures and did interviews with people all over the planet. All over the planet is a little bit too much, in America, in the United States of America. So he interviewed people who built sex machines for themselves, not for selling them, not for just for personal pleasure, and because they have the idea of, I have... Mm-hmm. Build a sex machine now, okay? And he went to like suburban homes somewhere in Illinois and Tennessee and California and wherever. And he took pictures of the machines and pictures of the people who built those sex machines. It's really interesting that most of the machines are somehow, and that's why I'm referring to the thing that you're talking about, like the brain as the biggest sexual organ. Most of the sex machines are penetrating devices. So it's just like there's some dildo attached to some, most of the time, pretty easy mechanism that's just like moving the dildo all the time. And that's a little bit boring. So I mean, we know sexuality, and sexuality doesn't work. I mean, it's a male point of view, I would say. So the idea of having a big cock and it can move fast and it can penetrate another body, that's something really that's a male fantasy in a certain way. So
And who made that one?
Pardon?
And who made that one, or who designed that one?
Could you repeat the connection was really bad right now. I had a breakup now. Could you repeat your question, please?
Sure. I said, and who was the designer of that one?
So the designer of you mean of the lollipop machine, or who are you referring to?
About the one that went. That was sort of like a car going fast.
Okay, okay. Oh my God, I think the connection is breaking up. I have really bad breakup signals now. Okay, I'll try one more time. Good. So to sum the whole thing up is that we found it really boring. That most of the sex machines, and that's why I was talking about Timothy Archibald and the pictures of sex machines in suburban homes, most of the machines are penetrating devices. And we found it a little bit boring, because there's more to sexuality than just like a big cock that is fast and can penetrate. There's more to that. And I think that's really important, because most of the people building sex machines are men, and they have a certain idea of what a woman would like, or there are many people building sex machines. We have this idea of, so I'm building a device now for women out there. So almost like I will have the ability of giving pleasure to thousands of people, thousands of women out there, just with my machine. So many, many sex machine builders have this strange, like a meta fantasy of, hey, I'm building a machine now, and I will be able to have sex with hundreds of thousands of people out there because of the machine. I could do it myself, but I'll build a machine, and the machine will be out there. It's almost like a Freudian thing to think about. So, and that's why we wanted to have the licking lollipop, because it's not actually designed to really do anything, and it's not designed to do anything to a human body. It's just the machine is there for itself, and it's licking the lollipop for all eternity. But I can go to the fourth machine, because the fourth machine is pretty interesting too. Imagine a machine that's almost like a bicycle. And if you sit on the bicycle and you move the pedals, so if you're cycling on the bicycle, the movement of your feet pretty much triggers the movement of a dildo. It's really basic. It's of course this one is a kind of a penetrating device. But we found it really interesting because it's almost like a combination of a home training device, something like, you know, like these training cycles you have at home, combined with a sexual arousal thing. You have to see the pictures. It's kind of bizarre. You see it. And the guy who constructed it, he wrote us an email, and he's 49 years old. He lives in the Bay Area, and he presented the machine at a couple of art exhibitions. So he told us the story that he wanted to create this thing. He had this idea in his mind to create a machine that's half sex machine and half training device. And he somehow built it. He tried it even to run it with a motor then, or like to have, so you don't have something like to store the electricity and that you're generating when you're cycling on it and stuff like that. So he had a couple of really bizarre stories about the production process and the experimentation on the machine. And he was even interviewed by Timothy Archibald, that was talking earlier about the guy going to different places in the United States and taking pictures of sex machine builders and their devices. And he was interviewed by him, but he didn't make it into his book. And he was kind of disappointed. Hey, Timothy Archibald didn't publish my machine in my book because, quote, it's too intentional. I don't know what Timothy Archibald means by the machine is too intentional, because I don't know. I mean, there's nothing more intentional than a sex machine, I guess.
I don't know. I think it's a really fancy thing. I mean, when you talk about things like energy and the environment and health, and everybody always complains how boring it is to work out. I mean, my gosh, if you could orgasm your way to a aerobic workout, wouldn't that be fabulous?
Yes, it would be. I mean, in fact, it has nothing to do with Ars Electronica, but a good friend of mine from Austria, and Monochrome is an Austrian group, but we thought it would be excellent to have the show in San Francisco, because it's a kind of San Francisco thing to do, a show about conference about sex and technology. So we are from Austria, and a good friend of mine recently started an art project that is pretty much, it's not really fake, but it's kind of impossible to really do it. He was thinking of using all the energy that people produce, you know, like in gymnasiums and stuff like that, and on their home treadmills and stuff like that. He's pretty much envisioning power plants, so like a combination of power plants and fitness centers. So people go to the fitness center, and in the same way, when they are trying to lose their body fat, they are producing energy in this like power plant fitness centers. I really like the idea. It's of course, I guess, highly impossible that something like that will will ever be really built, but I like the conceptual idea of the fitness center power plant.
I do too. That's cool. Maybe one day.
I guess we're then back again with science fiction. Not really sex, but of course with sex, because if you think about fitness and the whole fitness movement, and that's of course highly connected to sexuality and sexual attractiveness and stuff like that. And I think even the whole obesity discussion that's going on in the United States of America, I mean, pretty much all of the things could be somehow tied to this new way to shape the body. I mean, I'm from Europe. We are not actually eating healthy in Europe, and there's lots of bullshit going on there too. But it's always highly interesting when you talk to American people about the whole, you know, like high fructose corn syrup everywhere and stuff like that. That's completely messing up your metabolism and stuff. Whatever. But I guess I shouldn't start ranting about high fructose corn syrup, I guess.
Well, I come from farming country, and right here, right now, my boyfriend's family, they're farmers, sugar beet farmers. So you know, we're not fond of the corn syrup.
The sugar beet thing, that's actually not the bad thing, because like concerning the metabolism, the interesting thing with high fructose corn syrup is the fructose in it, and the fructose
right.
is pretty much messing up the metabolism. I mean like cane sugar or sugar beet sugar is not really healthy at all. But
we're like against that corn syrup stuff because it's nasty, but sugar beets and cane sugar are good things.
Okay, I mean, in a certain way, we are pretty much like talking about politics now, I would say, and I could actually talk a little bit about the third day of Ars Electronica on Sunday, because that will be the politics day, and I guess I don't have anything more to tell you about the awards, because I think the machines should pretty much speak for themselves. Please go to our homepage and check out the pictures of the machines and the pictures of the awards. And I think that's better than really talking about it a long time. And we're talking about political stuff. And I mean, high fructose corn syrup is quite a political thing to talk about if you think about like the economics of subsidizing food and stuff like that. And okay, let's go back. We're talking about sex here, actually. So the third day of Ars Electronica is about sex, science fiction, and politics. There will be a couple of really, really interesting talks. And for example, there is Jason Brown from Los Angeles, and he's one of the founders of Machine Project. And Machine Project is an artist-run tech center, which is pretty cool. If you should come to Los Angeles, you should definitely check out the Machine Project. And Jason Brown is one of the founders. And his talk is called Mind Diddlers. And I really have to read the subtitle for you. The Mind Diddlers, an investigation of sex as a symbolic system for non-human communication among UFO contactees, magic subcultures, and alternative religions. That's his talk, okay? And it might sound a little bit abstract or strange or wet or whatever, but he's actually a philosopher. So he's a philosopher that will talk about the intersection and the connection between politics, sexuality, and magic. And why magic? One of the founders of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, that's the laboratory where NASA is pretty much controlling all the spacecraft, like the unmanned spacecraft, like Voyager and all the and Galileo and how whatever names they have, and the recent Pathfinder missions to Mars and stuff. So the guy who started the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, he was heavily into Aleister Crowley and magic. And Jason Brown, in a certain way, tries to to present us with an interpretation of science, especially hard science. Like, I mean, NASA, they're doing hard science. I mean, they're space explorers, yeah. And he's
right.
trying to tell us a couple of stories about science and how science and people who are dealing with science are often, in a really interesting way, connected to magical things going on, and they have sometimes quite extreme views about the world. I mean, just who would think that the person who started the Jet Propulsion Laboratory was into dark magic? I mean, who would think that? Yeah, and he's also tying that to the whole UFO craze. I mean, there are so many stories out there, and we have a conference about sex and science fiction here. There are so many stories about UFO abductees who were, you know, who had sexual intercourse with aliens and stuff like that. There's a whole genre of abductee stories that are in a certain way sexually connotated. And most of the time it's, of course, like pure psychology. I mean, some people have strange ideas and or they have bad dreams and they think they've been abducted by a UFO and maybe they just had, you know, like a bad sex dream. Who knows? So it's probably hard really to summarize his whole talk, but he's talking about these intersections of subcultures, especially magical subcultures, UFO subcultures, and science, and of course science itself has certain subcultures, and he's trying to combine that together to interesting prestige of modern life, modern society, and politics. And I'm really looking forward to seeing his talk. That will be really cool. And by the way, if anyone is out there who would love to come to our conference but is not in San Francisco, all talks will be online as MP3 files. So, for example, if you are interested in Jason Brown's talk about the mind stealers, you would probably you'll probably find it online within the next week. So please come to our Ars Electronica homepage and download the MP3 files and listen to it. So, we always we are very much into Creative Commons and stuff like that. So we really think, although we're, of course, charging an entry fee because we have to somehow pay the conference and all that stuff, we think that the information should be out there and people should be able to download the information and listen to the talks. That's a really important aspect to spread the word, I guess.
Yeah, because I've never heard of this before, so I was really surprised. And now I'm like, I didn't find out in enough time to get there. But you are planning a third one, right?
Planning a third one, and actually, I'm really happy. It's really quiet now. I mean, I don't know if you hear a difference, but now, all the 1,000 whatever people walking by me, they are all now in there and listening to the reading. So, and it's really quiet out here. It's relaxing. Okay, so yeah, we are planning a third Ars Electronica next year. So. We were thinking of maybe going to a different American city next year. So, but there's a high chance that we'll do it again in San Francisco, because San Francisco is almost a really perfect city to do something like that, because there's Silicon Valley just around the corner, and San Francisco is known for its thriving sexual scenes. So it's almost perfect to have like a sex and technology conference series in San Francisco. But I think it would also be interesting to do it in New York City, for example. But I mean, we have more contacts at the moment in San Francisco, but we'll keep all the people out there updated about next year's plan. And of course, if you have any interesting ideas for a talk or a performance or a sex machine or telelildonic device or something like that, there will be, of course, a call for papers and a call for machines, I guess, within the next 2 or 3 months. So as soon as we know the new topic for next year's conference, we'll send out the call for papers and the call for machines, and everyone is really highly invited to take part in Ars Electronica. So if you already have a really cool idea about sex and technology in a talk, please write it down. Don't forget it. There will be a call, and I hope we can all bring you over to wherever the next conference will be.
Well, I've already got ideas, so you'll be hearing from me. I have to ask you, because we only have a few more minutes left, I have to ask you, you know, I've as a former sex worker, I've made a lot of money off of, you know, all these different cons and science fiction fantasy gatherings and comic book gatherings as well. And there's quite a number of people dressed in, you know, Star Wars outfits, Star Trek uniforms. Is anybody at your conference dressed up like that?
Yes. I didn't want to go to get into details, but we actually had an award. Like I was talking about the sex machines and sex machine awards we had last night, and because we invited people to come to the opening night in sex and science fiction related costumes, and we had quite a couple of people showing up, and we had one award especially for the best costume of the evening, and the costume was really cool. It was like a Star Wars stormtrooper, and you would think, when I first saw the guy walking in, oh, okay, yes, there's a guy in a stormtrooper's outfit. Okay, that's kind of, I mean, it's not boring, but, I mean, it's just a stormtrooper outfit. You can buy it somewhere. And then I was looking closer, and he had this really, like, nifty, small BDSM gadget attached to his stormtrooper outfit. So it was almost like a BDSM stormtrooper. And we thought, that's cool. It's like on the first view, you don't really see it. But then if you get closer, you see the small, you know, leather straps on the stormtrooper. And we thought, that's cool. That's perfect. That's combining this, like, super pop culture aspect of Star Wars with this underground kind of BDSM thing. We like that. I mean, in the meantime, you can't even say that BDSM is underground anymore. I mean, BDSM is a big thing. But we thought it's a good combination of two strange worlds, I guess. And that's why he got the award for the best costume.
What was the worst?
Pardon?
You said you had a contest for the worst costume?
Not for the worst. It was like the costume
best
award. No.
Oh, okay.
I have to apologize for my German language roots. Sometimes they crawl out between the English sentences I try to formulate.
That's okay.
No, it's not the worst.
If you can live with my accent, I can live with your accent. We're all good.
Okay. Okay,
well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of the conference. I know you're busy, but really interesting. And the one thing I wanted to mention is you have a book out from last year's conference, right?
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm completely exhausted at the moment because I had like 2 days of conference behind me, and it's pretty late at night and stuff. I hope I didn't babble too much bullshit with the last hour. Okay, yes, you're right. You're right. I completely forgot about that. Thanks for reminding me. Last year's conference is available as a book. It was published as a cooperation between Monochrome, my group, and Research. And Research is one of the most important and maybe the most important underground publisher in the United States of America. I mean, he did so many interesting books in the last couple of decades, so it was really, really cool to work together with the Whale of Research Publications and to create this book. So the book is available. We presented it yesterday. It's called Pronovation, Pornography and Technological Innovation, the First Ars Electronica Anthology. And all the main talks of last year's Ars Electronica conference can be found there in an updated form. So a couple of the talks are even better in the book than they were at the conference last year. There's an excellent essay by Mark Derry, a cultural critic from New York City. There's tons of cool stuff you can find there. And it's available now. So we presented it yesterday. So I think that the official, it won't be available, I guess, in bookstores. I think it will be available in bookstores maybe in December. I'm not sure about that. I would have to ask Vale about that. But if you send an email or if you order directly at Research Publications or at Monochrome, you can immediately order a copy.
Yeah, and I will say that we were sent a copy because Silent Porn Star is going to review it at Sex Kitten.
Cool.
And I was allowed to briefly look at it and touch it before she took it away from me. It's a nice, oversized, glossy book. It is really slick looking, and I wanted to sniff it and run my fingers through it, but she took it away. And she's promised to have the review within 2 weeks, so it'll be up at sex-kitten.net. Folks can look there
Excellent.
And find out more about it.
It seems the International Postal Network is working, because I sent it when I was still in Vienna last week. I sent it with airmail to your address to the address, and I'm happy it arrived.
Yeah, I got it yesterday, and she popped over and picked it up. And like I said, she wouldn't let me touch it or play with it or look at it. I had to wait, she said.
Perfect. I really believe it is in good hands.
Yeah. She's like, no, mine, she slapped. So the review will be up there and I'll have to wait. But like I said, it was a nice, you know, I'm a book lover, you know, so I'm like, ooh, silky pages, and, you know, it's shiny, glossy, and sexy. And I was like, yeah. She's like, nope,
yeah.
Mine.
And there's something really bizarre about the book. I mean, it's not bizarre for Europeans, but it's probably bizarre for Americans. The book was printed with funding money of the Viennese city government. So there's actually funding money of like an official Viennese, the Viennese, like the Department for Art and Culture of the Viennese city government in Vienna, Austria. They paid for the book. They paid
wow.
part of the printing costs. And that's kind of bizarre, I guess, for Americans to hear that there's a book about pornography and technological innovation and a state organization.
That is amazing. And,
paid
you know,
for that.
We have this little thing called the presidential election coming up November 4th. And many of us have been discussing where we can flee to if the worst case scenario of Paul and McCain wins, we're all wondering, if we can't live in a nation that doesn't represent us, where we can go. Maybe then Vienna's a place to look at. Go over to Austria, get out of America, because they help
maybe
cover books.
I can assure you, we have a couple of really stupid racists over there in Austria, too. But I mean, the problem is pretty much everywhere. So, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who's from China, and I was talking to him and telling him, so how's the thing in China? I mean, there's China. China is a communist country, okay? So at least it calls itself a communist country. And he then told me, I tell you what, the only communist countries I know on the planet are somewhere in Central Europe, because universal health care, arts funding, all that stuff, I mean, that's so communist. I mean, you like nothing like that exists in my communist country, my so-called communist country of China. So, and I was
yeah.
just thinking of, somehow true, but still, I mean, even if you, I mean, I'm living in Austria for a long time. I'm doing stuff there. I'm doing political work there because Monochrome is pretty much a political a group. And there's like, if you would come to Europe, you would find stuff that you would be able to protest against. I promise you. So there's bullshit going on all over the planet. We just have to spot it and try to stop it. And I hope that the American people will will
be sane.
Like we'll have a good choice in November.
Yeah, me too. Well, thanks a lot for being here. I hope you get some sleep, and we'll be in touch. I'll make sure that the xxbnradio.blogspot.com gets links to your website and keeps updated for listeners too. Because I really think it's cool, and I'm hoping I can make it next year.
Yeah, it was a pleasure being on the show. It was a great honor, and I have a system malfunction.
Maybe you need to go look at that machine licking the lollipop again. That might wake you up.
Maybe. I think I'll have a better idea. I'll go around the corner to this wonderful Mexican place and get a big burrito and a beer. I think that's what I'm going to do now.
Excellent choice. I wish I could do that. Everything out here is probably closed. So I'll have to wait till tomorrow. But thanks a lot, and best of luck tomorrow and with the rest of the conference.
Okay, it was a pleasure, and hope to talk to you again in the future. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye. And that's it. Cult of Gracie Radio and XXBN is off for the night. Thank you.
Hello?